Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about something that's changing the game for women in dental leadership. It's called the Empowered Leadership Experience for Women in Dental. It's a six-month transformational journey for women who are done with burnout, over-functioning, and trying to lead like someone they're not. This isn't just another leadership training. It's a coming home to your voice, your power, and your joy. If you've ever felt alone at the top or stuck somewhere in the middle, this one's for you. Enrollment is now open. Head to leadhership-experience.com to enroll. Because real leadership isn't about performing. It's about remembering who you are. Now, let's get into today's episode. Have you ever met someone and knew, this relationship's going to be different? Well, that's my relationship with Dr. Brett Kessler. We met through the sacred path of sobriety and recovery, and what we both learned is our fierce dedication to helping others and making this world a better place. Brett is not only the current president of the American Dental Association, he's also an Ironman triathlete, a dad, a husband, and a friend to many. In this episode, we talk about the incredible work that he's doing at the ADA to advocate for mental health reform and support, to support the industry and all those that are in it, whether they're dealing with addiction or mental health issues in general. We talk about recovery. We talk about the impact that his story has had on me and the many lives that he touches throughout his path. And we also talk a little bit about music because we got to. Brett and I have a shared friendship that unites us over sobriety, recovery, and supporting others. So whether you're in the industry and you're looking to learn a little bit more about your president, or you're in recovery and you'd like to hear a story about a man who's gone through hell, has come back, stood and held the line for others, and still has a hell of a lot of hope, this one's for you. This is also for you if you're looking to return back home to yourself. Let's dive in. Brett, welcome to the Real Talk of Dental. I'm so excited that you are here. You are an incredible human being and such a huge fan of you and all that you stand for and the impact that you've had on my life. And so it's such an honor to have you on with me today. And I know you've made a huge difference in so many lives. And so one of the things I want to dive into right away, because it's such a passionate topic for both of us, is sobriety and the impact that it's had on both of our lives. Not only that, but also the impact that it has in the industry. And you being so honest and transparent about your sobriety journey and your advocacy in this work. And so I wanted to hear from you. What do you think has been the greatest gift about sharing openly about your recovery and getting sober?
Thanks, Brandy. Hey, it's great to be here. And I admire everything you're doing to make a difference in the profession. I think we should start by saying how we met before we even get to that question.
Why don't you? I love that.
Okay. It'll set the stage for the answer. So go ahead.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because you've made such a huge difference in my life, as I've shared. So I've been sober now for a while, and I have had a lot of people in the recovery community ask me, or even professionally when they learn that I'm sober, ask why I wasn't really public about my sobriety. I had my sober life and then I had my professional life and I kept the two very separate. A lot of it is because of the stigma around addiction and what a lot of people still think it means, or when somebody says they're sober, what it means. And I just didn't want to deal with it. And I had a lot of people saying, yeah, but sobriety is like your greatest superpower and you're such a badass being sober. And it tells me that like you've been through some shit. If I was going to have you as a coach, I think I'd want you more as a coach because of what you've seen and what you've accomplished and what you've done. And you're a testament to this work. And I still couldn't get my head around it. And I even had people in recovery saying, you know, if you were out more, it would help break the stigma because people have this image of what people in recovery look like, and you could be one of those people. And still couldn't do it. Then I heard you on a fellow friend and colleague's, Dr. Brett Gilbert's podcast, and you were sharing about your recovery, your sobriety. You were telling some stories that I was like, wow, he's really saying this out loud. And here you are, you were the president-elect of the ADA at the time, and I'm listening to you share all of this openly. My heart exploded, and I felt like I fully had permission to now share. They said, well, if this guy can do it, then I can do it. He's leading the industry, and he's out loud and proud about his recovery. Slowly but surely, I started sharing a little bit about my recovery and my sobriety publicly. And much to my surprise, everyone was like, oh, okay. And then carried on with the day. At the time, I was also helping and supporting our friends, Margie and Laura, with the Sober Life Rocks group, which is trying to revolutionize dental industry events and having sobriety be more inclusive in event spaces and dentistry and now professionally. We were trying to get that off the ground. And I completely freaked out. I was like, oh my God, we have to get this guy to help us because the president of the ADA is sober. Did anyone know this? We had no idea. And we were trying to build this thing. So I DM'd you on Instagram thinking it was a Hail Mary. I thought there's no way this guy is going to reply. He's so busy. You replied to me within an hour, I think. And I told you what we were up to. And you're like, oh my God, yes, sign me up. Anything I can do to help. Get me on there. And then you've been such a supporter and involved ever since. So yes to all those things. So you changed my life, and now I am sharing about this, and now it's even on my website about my sobriety. Thank you. And I owe you a huge debt of gratitude, because as somebody who believes in honesty and transparency and full integration, I'm now able to blend all parts of myself and live in total alignment. What that's done for me as a person is just so much more confidence. I just feel so grounded and free. It gave me an enormous amount of freedom to just be myself and trust the process. So it's been an incredible gift.
You bring tears to my eyes as you say that. It's just full of gratitude. You know, I got sober in 1998, a year plus after I went to rehab. That's what addiction is. It's a process, and sometimes it's not linear. I had several relapses between my time in rehab and when I finally got sober. When I got sober, I felt inspired to live my best life. You know, your brain is so locked up in addiction. You know, you've got a single purpose, get through the day so you can use. When all of those brain pathways had been overridden, I'm like, I've got a whole life ahead of me. I was 30 years old and I've got a blank page. I'm going to write a great story. A few years into this journey, I met a man who was vice president, is still vice president at Hazleton, William Cope Moyers. He openly talked about his recovery and how if no one shares about their recovery, no one will know how great recovery is. It got me thinking about, you know, I was so full of shame and humiliation when I came in. It was the first time I ever failed at anything in my mind. When I surrendered that failure attitude and looked at, you know, I was really sick. I wasn't bad. I was sick. Recovery is the best thing that's ever happened to me. Why am I ashamed to share about it? I started sharing about it. And every time I do, you know, I say a little prayer before I start a talk such as this. I pray that someone hears something they need to hear through my sharing my experience. That prayer was answered when you sent me that direct message on Instagram. You never know who's listening, what they hear, and when they hear it. My recovery has been foundational to everything in my life, and every thing that I am, I attribute back to the crossroads that I was at, where should I live, should I die? Because I was contemplating death and I chose life and the tools that I picked up along the way to live an amazing life and be a catalyst for positive change in the world all stemmed from my recovery. I'm ever grateful for it and I'm proud of it. I share about it openly.
I love that so much. I forgot to mention too, when I was talking to you about it, I shared my hesitancy on sharing. You were dumbfounded in saying, recovery is the greatest success of my life. Why would I not share about it? Sometimes it takes that for somebody to shift the context of how other people might perceive it. We make up stories in our head and think that's the truth and reality. By you shifting that for me, I was like, yeah, you're right. This is the biggest success. And so yeah,
that's
awesome.
I do want to say something that if you are in recovery, sharing your recovery is a very personal choice.
Yes.
You'll know if and when you want to share your recovery. It's not a necessity to stay in recovery. For me, it was a choice to become more open about it. And it took me 5 or 6 years before I had the courage to do it. I've never regretted it, but I know plenty of people who are very personal. They want to keep it very personal to them. And I respect that to no end.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, that's a very important footnote to add. Yeah. So speaking of this, I wanted to read some general stats that I pulled off online. It says, a review found roughly 42% of dentists report symptoms of depression and 44% experience anxiety, a staggering emotional burden revealed in peer-reviewed research. Also saying 82% of dentists show signs of burnout, with depression, anxiety, and substance use disorder rates climbing sharply. 80%+ report major stress on the job, and 36% feel defeated, want to quit, or avoid work at least several times in the prior 6 months. In a larger survey, 46% of dentists are at low risk, 39% at medium risk, and 15% at high risk for depression, especially among younger dentists. As many as 1 in 6 to 1 in 10 dentists experience substance use disorder, translating to approximately 20,000 to 30,000 U.S. dentists facing addiction annually. The substance of choice, 37% alcohol, 31% opioids, 10% street drugs, 5% nitrous oxide. Suicidal ideation report. In one study reported that 1 in 6 dental practitioners has had thoughts of suicide in the past year. These stats to me are pretty staggering. One thing I want to talk about is when there's so many facts on this epidemic in our nation, and then particularly in dental, why do you think there's still such a stigma around the idea of addiction? And why is it not embraced as something that really needs to be addressed, whether it's addiction or mental health in the industry?
Yeah, a lot of those stats came from the ADA's Health Policy Institute. One of the reasons I'm in leadership is to uncover the truths about dentistry's hard. The people that go into dentistry are the smartest of the smart, whether you're a dentist, hygienist, dental assistant, office manager. Most go into this field to help others when sometimes we can't feel the help for ourselves, and it gives us a sense of purpose. We're high achievers, and being high achievers, we don't like to ask for help. We don't like to show any signs of weakness. We have all the answers, and we develop coping mechanisms along the way because we've been successful to get to this point, right? But we developed coping mechanisms to get through those, and some of those coping mechanisms are healthy. Some are very unhealthy. Early in my life and career, I chose the unhealthy version of drugs and alcohol. I was one of the street drugs guy. Cocaine was my drug of choice. Alcohol was a close second. And then whatever you had, I would take. I didn't like nitrous that much. I didn't like pot that much. But those are my coping mechanisms. It gave me that sense of peace to get through it. But then it took over at some point. You know, most of our dentists are still in solo private practice. And so we have the dysfunctional family system, AKA office team, that will support our disease per se. Their jobs are dependent upon the dentist being there to produce. No production, no paycheck. And so a lot of times there's a gross amount of enabling within the dental team. The dentist shows up late on a regular basis, locked in his or her office in between patients. We don't know how to deal with it because most of us had never failed at anything. And so I think the best way out of this is like what we're doing is talking about it, talking openly. The ADA has a couple of resources that I think are really good. And many states have resources too, where you can access therapy through your phone, okay, mm-hmm. through your computer, and you can access it with dignity. The ADA has the Mayo Clinic's well-being index. So you can check in and you can answer some questions and it'll basically tell you you might need some help or you're doing great. And you can retest every month or so and see your progress. We also have an app called Talkspace Go that's attached to Talkspace Therapy where you can take a test and it'll spew out a report based on your answers and say, hey, you may be suffering from burnout. You may be suffering from depression, anxiety, substance abuse disorder. And, here are some resources about what that means. Here's some resources that can help you get out of it. We've got a group chat on Zoom on Thursdays for those experiencing depression, where you can openly talk about it with dignity. You don't have to turn your camera on. You can put a pseudonym on there and no one will know it's you. By the way, here are three therapists in your area that we matched you with that you can access through this app as part of a member benefit. It's really wonderful that we're embracing this. Another big barrier for people getting help is the stigma associated with licensing and credentialing.
Mm-hmm.
I had to answer some questions when I moved from Michigan, where I got sober, to Colorado, where I live and practice now. Those questions put me in a place where now I'm on probation for my license. I did nothing wrong. I didn't violate the Practice Act whatsoever, yet I was put on probation because I sought help and they didn't know what to do with me. So we at the ADA, we're advocates for best practices within dentistry. And one of the things we're advocating for is changing those stigmatizing questions to make it less punitive and more supportive. Several states have embraced the reset of these questions, which I'm really excited about. And I'm hoping we can get that around the country in the next several years. Mental illness is a human condition. And most dentists and dental professionals are human. Not all, but most. But we think we're superhuman. That's why I say that. But we're not human. We are affected like all humans are. We have a mental illness crisis in this country. Okay. It's not just within our profession. It's everywhere. Not only can we as practitioners take care of our colleagues, but we also have a great opportunity to extend that to our patients. Yes, we're focusing on teeth, but L.D. Pankey, one of my biggest mentors, says, I never had a tooth walk into my office. It was always attached to somebody. Mm. Treat that somebody. And part of that somebody may be, I can't imagine, a patient coming in with fear or anxiety, a patient coming in drunk to deal with that fear or anxiety. We've got an opportunity to talk to our patients about everything going on within their health. And we can be a resource to maybe nudge them a little bit. I've had several of my patients through my career who I've suggested something is not quite right. And many of them I helped get into therapy or treatment or change lifestyle things. And, many I just planted seeds for and some came back a couple months later and thanked me. Some went off and died to their disease. And that's the reality.
Yeah, and it's a great segue in the point that as you were talking, it made me wonder, and I don't know if you would have a suggestion for this, but let's say you are a team member and you're concerned about your doctor. I see that as a coach. Teams enable maybe not addiction stuff, but bad behavior in general, right? Because they do have the loyalty to the doctor, they are paying their wages, and they all just talk behind each other's backs about things and not always get to the solution. So if you are a team member and you're concerned about your doctor, or maybe you're concerned about a team member because addiction also runs its course, with team members as well, right? It's not just the doctors. Do you have any suggestions for people at the team level or, even as a doctor, if you're concerned about one of your team members on how to approach something like this, if you feel like they have an addiction issue?
Or any mental health issue, basically. Mm-hmm. I think the three most powerful words you can say from one human being to another human being is, I am concerned. Brandy, I'm concerned. I see a change in your behavior. When you first started here, you were full of energy and ready to contribute. Now you're coming in late, sometimes smell alcohol in your breath. You're sleepy. You're not the person I remember. Is something wrong? Is there anything I could do to support you? And it comes in the I statements, I am concerned. Is there anything I can do to support you? If you say, hey, you're drunk, they get defensive and they will go back to their coping mechanism. They may lash back out at you, or they may retract, or they may never come back to work. If you're truly in the caring profession, we have to treat our colleagues in a caring way. We should extend the same courtesies we extend to our patients towards our colleagues. Just because you come at it in a high level, emotional, intelligent way doesn't mean they're going to be ready to make the change. A lot of times you're just planting seeds and hopefully that seed germinates and grows and it turns into, you know, a conversation that you can really guide that person towards getting help, whether it's substance abuse, whether it's depression, anxiety, burnout. Burnout, 82% are showing signs of burnout. Mm-hmm. 82%. That is awful.
Yeah, Dennis, it's happening younger and younger.
Brandy, what you do as a coach, it's a positive coping mechanism. If a dentist is looking for a coach, they're not satisfied with where they're at mm-hmm. and they need help. They're willing to invest in themselves to get through whatever is blocking them and grow to be the person and business they want to have. You are, you know, a big step in preventing clinical burnout or treating clinical burnout. Coping mechanisms for clinical burnout, you know, show up in substance abuse. It show up in destructive behavior. And so it's a choice. I'm glad people like you are out there to help our profession. I've had a coach my entire career. I've invested in it since I got sober. And it's the best thing that's ever happened to me because the best athletes in the world have coaches. And I'm an athlete, so that's a...
Me too, you are. And you're a really good one too.
Why can't the best business people, why can't the best dentists have coaches? I'm the president of the American Dental Association. I have a therapist and I have a coach.
Yeah, which is amazing. I know. And I'm always very open too about my therapy, my coaches. I have spiritual advisors, sponsors. I work through different programs. And so it's, yeah, there is a stigma about asking for help. I think it's getting less for sure. And people can spin it, you know, in wanting to be more masterful at their craft or something like that. Whatever story somebody needs to tell themselves to reach out and get some help. But like you're saying, even the best of the best get help. LeBron James has coaches and support, you know, and there's a reason he's running the narrow path, right? Because he's being held together by a community. And I always say it takes a village to keep this chick going.
That's right.
We don't need to be doing it alone. With that, we had a really cool conversation. I do want to touch on the IDAA that we both got to experience. And so I would love for you to share a little bit about that. And I also would love for you to share, because you shared some of it with me when we were at that event together, but how your personal story and how does everything that you've worked on in your life from recovery to your athleticism and Ironman achievements, like just that's epic. How does it all tie into your leadership and who you are at the ADA as a leader there?
Yeah. So thanks for asking. When I got sober, I got inspired to live my best life. And in my recovery program, substance abuse is a disease of the brain. Okay. Depression is a disease of the brain. Anxiety, it's a disease of the brain. All of these things. So I have to change my brain to overcome this disease. Okay. And it is a disease. Yes, it manifests itself in behaviors that are not esteemable. Absolutely. You can really destroy relationships with mental illness if not treated. And so I set out as my recovery program to change my brain pathways to a more positive viewpoint of the world. A lot of personal work, mindfulness training, mindfulness exercises on a regular basis. I pray and I meditate. I journal. I speak to other people who are advisors, you know, and I grow my spirit on a regular basis. The tools I picked up along the way have benefits not just in my recovery, but in my life. When I opened up my practice in 2003, I opened up a scratch start fee-for-service practice in Northeast Denver. This is not an easy path, but I had a very clear vision on how I wanted to practice, one that will support my mental health and impact my community in a positive way. It'll give me a great career and the people that work for me a great career too. And so I had to be a leader, the best leader I could possibly be, because this is an uphill climb. I live in Colorado because I love mountains and I love to climb. And it's all a metaphor and it's all supporting my life. I dove into a self-directed leadership continuum where I started reading a lot of leadership books. I hired leadership coaches, business coaches, subscribed to Harvard Business Review, Leader to Leader. I got into leadership study clubs. Still to this day, I'm part of these and I still read voraciously on leadership. So I can be the best leader for my patients because I'm going fee for service. My practice philosophy was based on relationships. I would address the health, function, and aesthetics of my patients. Many of the things I offered, patients didn't even know were available in dentistry. I had to lead them to choose their finest care. I had to have a support group around me of my team to enhance the vision. They bought into the vision 100% because I was an effective leader. It was not always pretty, and you can ask them. I'm perfectly imperfect, but together we could do so much more than I could do on my own. And that led to other leadership opportunities through organized dentistry, both at the Metro Denver Dental Society level and the Colorado Dental Association level. I was president in 2013, 14. And one of my most proud achievements was I was part of the team that developed the dental benefit in the adult Medicaid system in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And now 300,000 people had access to care that didn't have access before. That just doesn't happen in a vacuum. It was part of a team. I said that very intentionally, that multifactorial messaging from all angles and being able to enlist support along the way and then being able to courageously present it in front of our state legislature and meet with our governor at the time to make this happen was just a beautiful thing, because now 300,000 people, and a lot of those 300,000 people, the working poor, many homeless and stuff, those were my people. Many of them were in recovery. Many of them were still suffering with substance abuse disorder and other mental illness. That's why they were stuck. My motivation for that was I treated a lot of patients in early recovery, and they were homeless and part of a treatment center. They were sober and full of life, but they still had the scars of their addiction on their face with their dental conditions. Mm-hmm. And so I started treating them for free, rebuilding their smiles, removing their infection, and giving them the ability to function, watching their self-esteem explode with the work that I did. And so now we got 300,000 people that had the same access who were suffering from the same problems. But it all stems from that spark, that catalyst for me to live my best life, be the best I could be, and make the biggest impact I can make. So you mentioned IDAA. Along the way, IDAA used to be a moniker for International Doctors in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's shortened now because we are so much more than that. But it's a recovery program for doctorate level health professionals and their families. It is a big part of my recovery. I invited you to come, and I had a great experience with you there. Last year, Margie and Heather came, and it was amazing for us to all be there and talk about recovery for 4 or 5 days and grow as we share our experiences. And so it is a program that we meet. You know, there's online meetings, 10 to 15 a week, just for doctorate level healthcare professionals. So it's a safe place for people to get help with dignity and explore their own journey with others in a mutually supportive fashion. And then we have a convention every year in the midsummer. This year it was in Spokane, Washington. Mm-hmm. Next year it's downtown Chicago, which I can't wait. That's where I grew up. That's my hometown. It's where the ADA is located. And so I'm really excited to experience that next summer.
Thank you for all of that. One thing I wanted to mention about the IDAA that I thought was so cool is that it's designed to be a family recovery program as well. When I was at the convention, they included partners, spouses, children, you know, some of these folks, yourself included, have been going for decades. I met one of your colleagues who's been going for 35 years, and his children grew up together. Your children as well have been there since they were young. The spouses get support too. It was this really beautiful community of healing. And I think that's important for people. It's a comprehensive way to get love and support. And you're being held in this embrace of community where everyone's supporting one another to get healthy and well. Addiction and mental health doesn't just affect the person. It affects their entire family. And oftentimes beyond, like you were saying, in practices, patients, the ripple effect can be pretty large. So it helps bring the family together so you can heal together and get all that support. So even if you are the spouse of someone who has mental health or addiction issues, or a child of one, you can be part of this and get that love and support too, which I thought was great.
Yeah. So my wife and I have 4 kids, and they were all born after I got sober.
Yeah.
And so we were questioning, you know, because they have this amazing children's program. 4 kids whose parents go through substance abuse issues. It's moderated through the Betty Ford Center and Hazleton. My kids had grown up in those programs, and they've got a cohort of friends across the world that have similar experiences. Watching my kids they have so much more emotional intelligence than I ever had as a result of growing up in this environment. They've played with substances, and I'm sure they use every once in a while, and that's okay. It was a problem for me. It's not a problem for them at this point. There is a genetic component, so that's always in the back of my mind. They've been resources for their friends. You know, when they see their friends hitting bottom, several of their friends are in recovery now, which is amazing. Wow. One great story, my son had a girlfriend who lived nearby, and he came up to me one day. He's like, "Dad, can you help such and such as dad?" I'm like, "What's going on?" And he's like, "I think he smokes a lot of crack." And these kids are in middle school. Dad's smoking crack on a regular basis. So I said, "Yeah, give him my number." My son was a catalyst for this guy's recovery. I started mentoring this guy and he's doing well. It was a result of me being open about my recovery and growing our family up in recovery. So it's really, you never know. You said ripple effects. There's the positive ripple effects of the beauty of recovery. It goes in places you never expect.
Gosh, what a cool story. Before we close out talking about the IDA, can you remind me, how long has it been around? Has it been around since like the 60s?
Oh, 80 years probably.
Yeah, for a really long time. So I thought that was really cool. And anyone interested can find it online. One thing to keep in mind is it's designed to be a safe space. And they do have the online platform for folks too. So if you want to start a recovery journey, but you're uncomfortable doing it, by going to local meetings or getting involved at a local level out of fear of what people might think or people seeing you. That's why the space is designed. So you have that safe space and it's, you know, you can get well until maybe you do want to be more comfortable being out or not, you know, but I think that's really beautiful. If anyone has that hesitancy, unfortunately, that stigma is still out there. And sometimes that prevents people from getting the help they need. There's always the thought, what will other people think? And I'm so scared to come out about this. So I'm going to suffer in silence and end up being somebody that deals with a lot of depression or takes matters into their own hands negatively. So there's so many opportunities for help between this organization and even a lot of the efforts and initiatives the ADA has brought forward with therapy and resources and people to talk to. If people want to get help, is it easily accessible through the ADA's website, some of these remote therapy resources? Yeah.
ADA.org/wellness. There's a whole page dedicated to wellness. And wellness for dentistry is much bigger than just mental illness. Dentistry is demanding on our bodies. Physical wellness is really important. We focused a long time on our Dental Wellbeing Advisory Committee for the ADA on physical wellness because ergonomics, 62% of our colleagues will miss work due to chronic injuries that happen because of how we work. We're upside down and backwards. It's really hard on our back, neck, shoulders, hands, sciatica. It used to be just general rules that orthopedic surgeon would give us hundreds of opiates a month to take while we work on our patients. And so it backdoored us into addiction. Physical wellness is really important. I spend a lot of time taking care of my body. I'm an endurance athlete, so I do a lot of getting my heart rate up on a regular basis. I want to push some weight around to keep my muscles in check. I'm very careful about the food I put in my body. I'm very careful and diligent about the sleep that I get on a regular basis. Yep. And mental wellness, and I'm not talking about mental illness, but mental wellness. Find ways to grow your brain on a regular basis. Listen to podcasts such as this. Read books, read articles, attend classes. Find ways to keep growing your brain. The mental illness or emotional wellness that we talked about is really important. And I just distill it down to try to experience the feelings to the best of your ability in the moment. And if you can't, seek help. Whether it's anger, angst, joy, happiness. We have a hard time experiencing these in the moment. But I found that as I learn how to, my life is so much more full. And then social wellness. Who do we choose to keep around us? Who's in our tribe? That could be family members. We have a choice in how we want to engage in family members. Some of them are toxic. Some of those relationships are toxic. Sometimes we have to protect ourselves and distance ourselves from some of those relationships. Same thing with our dental teams. I don't want to be around people that bring me down. My definition of a good relationship is that whoever I'm in a relationship, whether it's an intimate relationship or a friend relationship or collegial relationship, my world should expand. It should get bigger. If I'm in a relationship with you and it's making my world limited, I don't want to be in a relationship with you. It's slowing me down. Yeah. Finally, spiritual wellness. Find ways to grow your spirit. What lights your fire? What gives you a sense of purpose? It helps you get out of bed every morning and positively impact the world in a unique way that only you can. That comes through self-exploration. And when I talk about spiritual wellness, some people go right to religion, and that could be it for you. For me, it's about lighting that fire. If you follow me on social media, you'll see a lot of pictures of me on top of a mountain with the sun coming up. Those pictures are really for me because I just want to remember the experience of that moment and what I'm thinking about. And it's personal. And sometimes in my journaling, you know, repurpose a journal entry and put it on social media, attach it to one of those pictures, because I think it's a positive to make the world a better place. And that's what I use social media for, to make the world a better place and try and stay out of the noise. So that's what I do, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social, all five of those for me is what encapsulates wellness. And that's one of the things that I've been working on really hard this year as president of the ADA.
Yeah. I mean, it's just been incredible since you've taken the lead there and the initiatives that you've implemented. I know we're talking a lot today about mental health and overall wellness, but we could talk for hours about all the other amazing political, logistical things that you're working on for the industry. You've had your hands very full this year, to say the least. And I do want to ask, what has been the hardest thing for you since stepping into the role of president of the ADA? If there's one thing you could name. I'm sure there's a list.
Running for president of the American Dental Association was never in my goals, first of all. I have a mission statement that I read on a pretty much daily basis. Part of my mission talks about, you know, giving back appropriately to the profession. And then I've got a vision statement. Every 5 years, I write a statement on what I want to do in the next 5 years. And never in those, and most of those things came true in my vision statement. I'm due to write another one. As I exit this job, it's time to write a new one because I got a new chapter coming. I'm unemployed at the end of October.
I have no doubts. Whatever you're going to do next is going to be epic.
Never in my vision did I put, I'm going to be president of the ADA. Okay. My vision was always like, I was going to, you know, give back to the profession that has given so much to me. I decided in 2018 to run for a trustee position, which is basically the board of directors of the ADA. I had some unfinished business. And so I ran for trustee and I won. In my fourth year as a trustee, it's a four-year term, I had this opportunity to run for president. The president usually comes from the fourth-year trustee class. I never expected to win, but I had this thought that I've got one chance to go around the country and talk to the leaders in dentistry and share my vision of how the profession needs to go for a preferred future for our colleagues, and more importantly, for the communities we're serving. And I know fully well that my ideas are way ahead of what most people are ready to accept. If I plant a seed and these come to fruition down the road, I'll feel accomplished. I only have one opportunity to do this in my life. So I decided to go for it. And in running for president, it's just like running a political campaign. I had to raise a ton of money, and I had coaches, I had political experts guiding me. I had a team of, you know, inner circle leaders that I relied upon greatly. I had communication experts, speech experts, pods of people around the country working on my behalf. It was really like running a national campaign. And I won. I thought I lost when they announced my name. I was quiet and everyone's yelling at me, "Brett, you won." I'm like, "What? I won? No way." And that's so cool. I won. When I finally accepted the fact that I won, I'm like, "Oh shit, what have I done?" Okay.
Now you have to do the job.
So I set my goals to pen and paper and shared them with the leadership at the time, Dr. Linda Edgar and Dr. Rick Colmia. They were so supportive of the things that I wanted to accomplish. We started working on it immediately as president-elect. One of them was wellness, like what we've talked about the last several minutes. The second one was reconnecting the mouth to the body. Mm-hmm. And we learned in dental school that the mouth is connected. And there's compelling research and evidence that shows we can improve oral health, we can improve overall health. And that's how I practice. And so I wanted to reconnect that culturally, because when we get out of dental school, the payer systems disconnect the mouth from the body. And so I'm doing a lot of work to reconnect that through insurance reform, both in the public and the private. The third thing that I wanted to accomplish was a culture of respect. Whatever practice model you as a dentist want to practice, that we want the ADA to be there to support you. And this is diversity, inclusivity. And these are trigger words in today's political environment. A lot of times I have to be the voice for those that can't be a voice. All of the things that I set out to do, I'm very intentional. I've either have been accomplished or well on the way. Then we throw in the political environment that we're in. It's very volatile. Mm-hmm. I never expected to be a fluoride expert, but I'm a fluoride expert. A couple of days ago, I got to testify in front of the Food and Drug Administration about the benefits of fluoride. I've had meetings with the personnel at the White House to impart the importance of oral health on overall health. Those are really great opportunities. I'm pushing the profession to evolve out of necessity and out of what I said, the best preferred future, not only for our colleagues, but for the communities we're serving. A lot of our colleagues don't understand that. I'm a very visionary type leader. A lot of people are stuck in the moment, and the biggest frustration is those that don't understand. And I'm okay with that. Sometimes it gets to me. From the day I was elected as the most popular person in dentistry, the day after I was the most hunted person in dentistry, I had to change my suit from a Teflon suit to a Kevlar suit because I get a lot of arrows and shots fired at me. I'm not doing enough of this, not doing enough of that. I feel like everything I intended to do as president was well on the way. And I'm very excited about that. The frustration is those that don't understand. At some point, maybe they will. At some point, maybe they won't. That's okay. But that's where I'm at with it. I'm so grateful for this opportunity because this position means so much to so many people. I had no idea the impact this role has on the profession, not only within the country, but worldwide. I get a lot of hate mail, but I get a lot of love mail too. I got one yesterday thanking me for all the work we're doing just out of nowhere, you know, left field people. And I'm so grateful to have these recognition of the impact I'm having, you know, in a positive way. It really far outweighs the negativity that I experience in this position. So I'm really grateful for this opportunity.
I hear that everything you've done has led you to this point between recovery, your Ironman and athletic training, running your practice, everything you've overcome, being a dad of four kids, being in a long-term marriage. You know, there's so many things that it takes to be who you are. I can see that has given you the perseverance and the steadfastness and keep getting up every single day and staying true to what you're committed to. I can see that theme throughout your entire life, which is so cool. Yeah, so before we go, I just want to pivot for one quick second because I did see on social media that you were at a Metallica concert, which of course, of course he's at a Metallica concert. This man never ceases to amaze me. I'm a huge music lover. I love going to shows. It's a huge part of my life. So I have to ask, what are your top three favorite bands or groups that you like to listen to?
Music's a big part of my life. Yeah. If you know me, I always have headphones on because I'm always listening to music. And I love all music. I'm not a big fan of country and Western, but everything else I love. My favorite bands in the world, I would have to say, and it's progressive music. Rush is my favorite. I listen to Rush every single day.
No way. I listen to.
And when their drummer, Neil Peart, passed away, man, I cried. I really did. It was really, you know, I didn't realize how much that music affected me. Second band would be a band out of England called Marillion. Nobody knows about them, but they're one of my favorites.
Wow, I'll have to check them out.
Yeah, lately I've been on a Van Halen kick, old Van Halen. I play guitar. And it brings up a lot of great memories of growing up to that music and reminding me of the first time I heard Van Halen play and what a sense of awe it gave me of what's possible with an instrument of guitar. I've got thousands of bands that I listen to and follow. The best thing for me is I put everything on random shuffle in my playlist, especially when I'm running. I hear the lyrics and it just inspires me. You always hear the right song at the right time. It makes an impact and it's a beautiful thing. I view music as what emotions sound like. It's a big part of my intentionality with my life. Metallica is awesome. They're up there as well. I've seen them a bunch of times.
Is there like any concert at all, not just Metallica, but do you have a favorite concert?
Hands down, in the 90s, seeing Peter Gabriel on the US tour. It just blew me away. I'm a big Peter Gabriel fan. It was one of my favorite shows in Chicago at Rosemont Horizon. There's a video concert of that tour that I watch every once in a while that brings me right back. The other one was recently, a couple of years ago, David Byrne at Red Rocks.
Ooh, wow. You know,
what an amazing showman he is. And recently, Stop Making Sense, Talking Heads, Stop Making Sense was reissued on the theaters. And I made my whole family go with me to see it because my kids hear it all the time on my music. Yeah. And we just had a party in the movie theater. Awesome. Music is what emotions for me sound like. Always positive.
Okay. So before we close, if you could speak directly to one dentist out there who is quietly struggling right now, what would you want them to hear from you today?
Just know that help is available. Reach out to a trusted friend, a mentor, get a coach, get a guide, get into therapy. Yeah. I field phone calls and emails on a regular basis for people who are struggling. A lot of times, just changing little things will make huge differences. We think it's big, but it's really little in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, we get stuck. So reach out, ask for help. You don't have to do this alone.
Thank you so much, Brett. You are a true rock star. I'm always amazed by you. I don't know how you are able to do everything that you do, but you're just an incredible human being.
You asked me at IDAA, do you sleep? I'm like, what?
I don't know how you fit it all in. It's always amazing to me. You're just an incredible human, and I'm so grateful that our paths cross. And through recovery, I was able to meet and connect with somebody as incredible as you, who's brought so much to my life. And again, the ripple effect you have, seeing you at the IDAA and the impact you've had on thousands of lives is incredible. The world is better with you in it. I'm glad you got sober. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're doing all the work you're doing. And you're just a rad dude. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you, Brandy. The feeling is mutual and you're doing great things. I'm here to support you in any way I can. Keep your foot on the gas.
Thanks, bud. I'll see you soon.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices. It's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.